Florida Matters is supported by WUSF members just like you. Your donation of $5 or $25 will help ensure public radio thrives. And thanks to Candy Olson, an additional $50 will be added to your donation. Visit WUSF.org/match to maximize your gift today. College campuses around the country are witnessing a surge of protests against the war in Gaza. Some of the demonstrations have been marred by violence as pro-Palestinian demonstrators have clashed with counter-protesters and faced off against police. I'm Matthew Petty, and today on Florida Matters, we'll talk about how demonstrations at the University of South Florida's Tampa campus unfolded over three tense days.
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
It's not the first time USF has been the backdrop for demonstrations. Later in the show, we'll revisit demonstrations on campus and around the greater Tampa Bay region from the Civil Rights era and Vietnam War up until the present day. Back to last week's demonstrations, Tampa Bay Students for a Democratic Society is calling for a ceasefire and divestment. They're demanding that the university cut financial ties with Israel. Tyler Ramirez, a USF student and a member of the group, says they're thinking of the people in Gaza.
They are the people that, you know, we're here for them. We're here in solidarity for them.
Before the protests, USF warned students by email not to set up unauthorized tents on campus. Three people were arrested during Monday's protest, including, we should note, a member of WUSF's administrative support staff. Joseph Chari of the local Students for a Democratic Society group talked with WUSF after the first round of arrests.
They want us to stop because we're strong, but we'll continue because we're strong, because we have the numbers and we're on the right side of history.
Jake Camp, a senior at the university, and Zane Shapiro, a sophomore, were among a group of several people holding Israeli and US flags and watching Monday's protest. But Camp said they weren't there for a counter-protest.
We hold flags for the United States as well as Israel because they are allies, and we are both Americans and we both support our allyship with Israel. We're also both Jewish, and in terms of being out here, we're more out here to show other Jewish students here at USF that you can be proud to be Jew on campus. You don't have to be scared.
On Tuesday, protesters returned, this time with homemade shields and umbrellas. Law enforcement used tear gas and arrested 10 people as they broke up the demonstration. We invited USF President Rhea Law and Chair of the Board of Trustees Will Weatherford to speak with Florida Matters. They were not available. But here's part of what the university said in a media statement.
The University of South Florida values the right to free speech and protecting the constitutional rights for individuals and groups on campus to express themselves. This includes peaceful protests and demonstrations that occur regularly on USF's three campuses without incident and are part of the public discourse of the university. However, the expression of free speech must remain peaceful and not violate the law or USF policies. The university has been clear that violence, threats, harassment, and disruptions will not be tolerated.
The university also said this about Tuesday's protest.
Police observed participants in person and through social media, expressing their intent to use some of the items they brought on campus as weapons and to resist university staff members and law enforcement officers.
USF Police Chief Christopher Daniel was not available for an interview with Florida Matters, but here's what he told Fox 13 Tampa Bay during a press conference Tuesday night.
My only question to that is, if you're out here peacefully protesting, why should you need shields and umbrellas?
For more on what happened during the protest, we spoke with WUSF's Nancy Guan and Megan Bowman. Nancy began by describing what she saw as police made arrests during Monday's demonstration at MLK Plaza.
So students started gathering on the plaza and, forming a circle because their intent for that day was to set up an encampment, you know, the Gaza Solidarity encampments that we've seen all across the U.S. and college campuses. So, you know, they were gathered in a circle and arms were linked together. And I was farther back from the group at that point interviewing another member. And that's when we heard shouting and like scuffling. And at that point, that was when the first arrest was made. Mm-hmm. So that was someone not affiliated with the university. They were led away, you know, zip tied to the police vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, you know, they formed the circle again, and I believe were trying to set up the tent. I saw them, you know, setting up what looked like a green tent, and that's when police clashed again with students, and two more arrests were made.
So, Megan, let me bring you into this conversation. Flash forward to Tuesday, and there's another protest happening. Where is this one?
So Tuesday was in the same exact place, MLK Plaza, right across from the fountain on the USF campus. They began setting up kind of early, around 10 a.m.
What did you hear from protesters about what they wanted to do that day?
Well, the whole reason they even started this and kept trying to build this momentum with this protest was what some of them called a failure for student organizations to get a meeting with administration. You know, around mid-March, they started a hunger strike, and they were asking for USF to divest from Israel, mm-hmm. all of their financial ties. And they wanted to meet with admin. And so this was kind of formed out of that.
So setting the scene for Tuesday, you've had people arrested the day before, protests are back again. What is the university saying to these protesters? What are they telling them to expect?
So on Tuesday when we got there, Dean McDonald said, you know, this event will end at 5 p.m. The organizers, Joseph Chari, mostly was having contact with her saying, you know, why do we have to leave at 5? Who made this rule? Can we stay later? And her response continuously was, this event will end at 5. And that was pretty much how the conversations between them went. They were telling them, you know, this ends at 5.
The university said police determined the protest was no longer peaceful after they, quote, observed participants in person and through social media expressing their intent to use some of the items they had brought on campus as weapons and to resist university staff members and law enforcement officers, end quote. So what did you see?
So around 1 p.m. when the rally started, they, you know, they're all chanting, talking, and they're kind of dispersed around the area. Around 3 p.m., that's when the locking of the arms began, and they made two circles. So a circle of people on the outside and a smaller circle inside, and there were tents built. I think more than 5 tents were in there, and mm-hmm. they were basically guarding them. So they had brought all these drinks, waters, provisions, everything in carts. In one of the carts, there was a blanket over it for most of the day. They take that blanket off. There's square wooden shields with two cords through it so they can place their arm through it. And then they had big golf umbrellas. So they had those around on the outside of the outer circle, and they were holding the shields up to basically hold the line. And mm-hmm. that was something they were chanting as well, hold the line. I will say, some of the organizers were walking around the outside of the circle, and they were not telling them to use these things as weapons. They were meant as a shield to them. I even heard people saying, like, don't push with it, use it to only protect yourself.
So tear gas is used. What did you see there?
As we're standing there, you know, I see this group like 3 lines deep of people kind of marching in, and they're dressed fully, you know, with gas masks, and they have the bulletproof vests and the big shields, and they're walking in. The other police officers and agencies start coming up. Everybody's got gas masks on. It's like they had like 3 lines of officers. I mean, it was truly something I've never seen like that. And then they warned them. They said, you know, at about 4:45, they got on a bullhorn and said, you know, you need to leave this. If you're not out at 5, this will be considered an unlawful assembly. And then by about 5:05, a Hillsborough negotiator came up and got on the bullhorn. And that's when she started saying, you know, you are now under arrest. Do not resist because you could get hurt. That was at 5:05. And by 5:20, that is when the first tear gas canister was thrown. What I remember seeing is that first tear gas canister go. and it kind of hit in between, about halfway in front of the police and about halfway in front of the protesters. They sent another one and it went into the circle. And it was almost like you saw the circles jump and all of a sudden people just dispersed. From that point, there were more thrown, and then a gust of wind came, picked it up, and we had to start running.
So Nancy, let me turn back to you. Thinking about Wednesday, so this is a day after the protest that Megan was covering. What happens on Wednesday?
So Wednesday, some of these student groups that had a hand in organizing these events, they advertised that there would be an off-campus rally this time. So they were going to meet at the 56th Street and Fowler Avenue, which is where they said they've held previous protests before. So I got there with another fellow reporter, Jessica Mizaros, and we were observing the preparations for the rally. And at that point, they were saying they weren't sure if they were going to move to campus. So we stuck around to, you know, see what would happen. The group was much larger this time. Since they had gathered off campus, there were a lot more community members. Just to keep in mind, there were, you know, elderly folks and also young children, too, in strollers. Mm-hmm. You know, there was about maybe 300, maybe more than 300 people marching down Fowler. Once we got to campus, you know, we did see police cars and law enforcement ready, and a couple of cars, you know, blocked off Fowler to, you know, let the crowd cross the street onto campus. That's when they made their way back to MLK Plaza. At that point, you know, they continued the rally. And what I saw and what our producer, Mark Schreiner, saw, there was a much smaller police presence this time. You know, there were a couple of police on bikes. There were a group kind of hanging back, you know, a couple yards away from the plaza. You know, they continued the event for about another hour. This time there were, you know, prayer and singing, and it became clear that it would be a peaceful protest. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, around 8 p.m., the group said that they were going to march back to where they began, you know, the 2 miles off campus. So that's how Wednesday went.
Mm-hmm. Megan, you mentioned, of course, that you're a student at USF, and this is all kind of happening amidst the backdrop of students graduating, right? So how does that feel to be kind of graduating with this in the background?
Yeah, it's surreal. I am glad that they didn't cancel our ceremonies. It's something a lot of us have worked really hard for, and a lot of this graduating class didn't get their high school graduation in 2020. So it's really important to a lot of the student body. I will say one of the more surreal things was standing and watching this unfold and seeing people take their graduation photos all around the plaza, because that's where the bull is on campus. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those iconic spots that people go and, you know, they wear all their regalia. And so we're seeing this police presence, we're seeing these protesters, and then we're seeing people with a photographer smiling for the camera. And it was just quite a, you know, juxtaposition. I mean, it was surreal. And I think also one thing that really sort of hit me was I am part of the student body, and it hit close to home.
Well, I want to thank you both for your reporting and for sharing your story with Florida Matters. We've been speaking to Nancy Guan from WUSF and Megan Bowman, who's also been covering the campus protests for WUSF.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Florida Matters. We've been talking about how pro-Palestinian protests unfolded at the University of South Florida. It's not the first anti-war protest or even the first divestment protest at USF, and not the first time police have been called in to disperse a demonstration on campus. Up next, a look back at the history of protests at the university and in the greater Tampa Bay region. Welcome back to Florida Matters, I'm Matthew Petty. The University of South Florida and other campuses around the country have been rocked by protests against the war in Gaza in recent weeks. USF's Tampa campus has seen protests before, and it's not the first time police have been called in to disperse a demonstration. We're going to talk more about protests on campus and in the greater Tampa Bay region, from the civil rights era and the Vietnam War to the present day. Andy Hughes is curator of Florida Studies at Special Collections at the University of South Florida. Library. He's been at the library for 25 years. Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Matt.
Also joined by Rodney Kite Powell. He's the director of the Touchton Map Library and Hillsborough County historian at the Tampa Bay History Center. He joins us by Zoom. Rodney, thank you so much as well.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Andy, I want to start with you. The University of South Florida Tampa campus has seen protests before, right? So take us back to the 1960s and 70s. This is when students across the country were protesting the Vietnam War. What did that look like for the University of South Florida?
It was pretty quiet here in 1968 when everything seemed to be in upheaval kind of across the country. USF students were a little late to that, I don't know, to that trend, you could say. Mm-hmm. But by 1970, it was in full swing here. So by that time, you have, you know, multiple things happening. But, you know, you've got Nixon getting elected and the war in Vietnam escalating, things like that. So the students here definitely were galvanized by that point, 1970, 71.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little more about the background to Martin Luther King Jr. Plaza at USF? This is where we've seen recent demonstration. What's the history of this part of the university?
Yeah, it was put there in honor of Dr. King in the early 1990s, and then it's been improved upon over time. But, you know, I think it's interesting because USF was founded at a time when the civil rights and the race problem was kind of predominant, you know, in the country. So USF was kind of, state leaders were feared that USF would be kind of a liberal influence in the Tampa area. It was the first time that a university had really, you know, opened up in a large metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And so the students, you know, got involved in the civil rights movement and things like that, especially locally, having to do with a local restaurant called the University Restaurant. So in some ways, the mission of USF sort of merged with the civil rights movement, the nonviolent movement of Dr. King. So you could say that, you know, there is some, I don't know, there's some affinity there. Mm-hmm. So,
Rodney, if I can bring you into this conversation, if you kind of look at Tampa Bay more broadly and kind of go back to that civil rights era, what was Tampa Bay's contribution to that movement in terms of protests, in terms of demonstrations and people standing up and saying they wanted to be counted?
As far as the civil rights movement goes, but Tampa was a little, I don't want to go so far as to say unique, but Tampa's experience was a little bit different. And some people kind of ascribe that to the multicultural experience that we've had in Tampa since the 1880s and the arrival of the cigar industry. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe a little overplayed, but we do know that the process of integration and the civil rights protests that led up to that were in whole a bit more peaceful. And they were done almost in a business way, mm-hmm. More than in a radical way. It was also a slower process. And I think, you know, kind of going back to what Andy said, you know, the establishment of USF came kind of later in Tampa's history, in the, you know, 1956 is when the legislation passed, but the campus opened in the early 60s. A lot of the civil rights protests started on college campuses, particularly on historically Black college campuses, and so places like Florida A&M in Florida and elsewhere around the country. Without a strong Black college student presence here, you didn't have that level of more forceful desire for integration, and then you didn't have that backlash that came with that from white residents. Mm-hmm. So the process of civil rights and integration, again, happened slower, but in a more peaceful way. And you can look at places like St. Augustine or even Tallahassee in the state, and they had much more violent clashes and things were much more tense. But here, it was just a little bit different. Now, in St. Petersburg, there was a bit more violence and a bit more resistance to the civil rights movement. But here in Tampa, the mayor set up a biracial committee, similar to the one that was set up in the state. And there were representatives of kind of the old guard of Tampa's Black community and Tampa's white community. And they just kind of worked out what the process of integration would be. And in that process, again, though happening probably more slowly, certainly more slowly than the city's African-American residents would like to have seen, it did happen in a more peaceful way.
Mm-hmm. Andy, I want to ask you about a specific site at the University of South Florida. Now, a couple of years ago, University of South Florida history students created a digital history project highlighting historically significant sites around the Tampa Bay region. You can find a link to that on our website. One of those they identified was Crescent Hill on the campus of USF Tampa. Of course, Crescent Hill doesn't really exist anymore. It's now the site of a parking garage. But in October 1970, students staged a peace rally on Crescent Hill. Can you tell us a little bit more about that event?
Yeah, it was called the Celebration of Life, and it was on Halloween that year. And it came at a time when there had been a lot of demonstrations and a lot of concerts that were considered, you know, that were political as well. So, you know, at that time, there was a lot of fighting over, you know, just what students are allowed to do on campus. And then they also had the problem of non-students coming on campus for these performances. In that specific instance, the students refused to leave. Basically, the university got an injunction against the concert, and after midnight, they were to disperse. Most of the students did, but some of them were digging in and saying they're not leaving. So they were rounded up and arrested. So there was like 50 students arrested in Crescent Hill.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what's interesting about it, too, is you know, the draft is really what animated so much of this. And, you know, what you see in the student movement in the 1970s at USF is that you have all these layers, you know. So there's some people are really interested in the ecology. Some people are interested in women's rights, et cetera, et cetera. So you have all these different layers, and the draft is really what galvanizes students the most.
Mm-hmm. So that's obviously a big difference between, you know, then and now, but there are some similarities, right? I mean, this mm-hmm. notion of students saying we're not leaving, police being called in, people being arrested.
Right.
When you see images like that, I mean, and thinking about recently, it is kind of shocking to see police in riot gear on the campus, but this is not the first time it's happened.
Right. Well, and it's not the first divestment, you know, campaign too. You know, in the 1980s, the anti-apartheid movement was really big on campus. And what's interesting about that is it took maybe 5 years for USF to divest. And I don't know legally if, you know, that's still possible. But I think that that's something to keep in mind, that even when there was nobody here who was, you know, defending apartheid or South Africa, and it took that long for, you know, USF to take action. So, you know, that's why I think students need to, you know, if they want to be effective, they have to think long term,
mm-hmm.
because this isn't something that even under the best circumstances isn't going to happen anytime soon.
Thinking about more recent events, in the early 2000s, during the U.S. invasion of Iraq, there were protests in various parts of the country. Rodney, what did we see in the early 2000s in the Tampa Bay area? Was there a widespread protest presence against the war in Iraq?
No. For the most part, the war in Iraq, but because I think in large part because of the presence of MacDill Air Force Base, you didn't see a lot of anti-war protests. I mean, you particularly in the city itself. And when you did, you would have a small number of anti-war protesters kind of overwhelmed by efforts to support the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in large part, you know, some of the post-Vietnam War anti-war protests, you know, certainly, you know, looking at even the 90s first Gulf War and then going into the kind of second Gulf War, there is the memory of the anti-war protests and how the veterans of the Vietnam War came home to not, you know, ticker tape parades and, mm-hmm. and things like that. Nothing was triumphant about their return. So I think people were very aware about how they protested, if they protested, and trying to keep it about policy and not people. Whereas, you know, Vietnam War protesters, you know, the soldiers themselves received a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Anger and angst.
Yeah, here at USF, you know, during the first Gulf War, there were some pretty big protests that faculty were really leading. And they did that on the side of the road with traffic going by and stuff like that. You know, I think the big thing that was left out about the 2000 Gulf War is 9/11, you know. And,
yes.
You know, this is, even though the invasion of Iraq happens sometime after, you know, people are still really imbued with this, you know, patriotic fervor and this kind of, you know, desire for some kind of, you know, retribution.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of tempering the protest movement a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
More recently, too, I mean, we saw protests sweep across the country just a few years ago in the summer of 2020 as people demonstrated mm-hmm. in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd. What did that look like on campus, Andy? What do you remember about that?
You know, everyone was home. So, yeah, 2020 was very quiet on campus, you know. So, yeah, if there were protests, they weren't happening on campus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it would have been interesting to see what would have happened if we did.
So I want to ask both of you just to kind of reflect on what we're seeing now and how that compares to what we've seen in the past. Andy, you kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, but what strikes you as similar? What's different about what we're seeing, what we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks and what we saw in the Vietnam era, the civil rights era, and up until now?
I mean, there's a lot of similarities, obviously. You know, you've got a lot of students with a mixture of non-students coming on campus to demonstrate. But obviously, there's a lot of differences here, too. You know, you've got, you know, the Islamic aspect, which is, you know, always vexing, I think, for some people. So I think that's something else volatile that's brought into the mix, you know, and it augurs back to kind of 9/11, memories of Sami Al-Arian, of USF really being grilled, you know, nationally for having this guy, you know, on the faculty.
And just to kind of get our listeners caught up, if they maybe aren't familiar with the case, this is
right.
a professor who eventually was deported to Turkey.
Right. Mm. Yeah. And it was a long, you know, very politicized case. And so immediately USF was kind of under the microscope. And, you know, I can speak personally, that, you know, we had a lot of political operatives come into the archives to do research to see what they could find, especially, you know, Betty Castor's political career was still viable at the time. And she was raked over the coals for that, although she wasn't actually president when this whole thing happened.
Rodney, when you think about what we've been seeing recently and the kind of longer history of protest in Tampa Bay, what's the standout for you in terms of similarities and differences?
Well, the thing that stands out the most, a couple of quotes I'm going to read to you from the news. So militant minorities on college campuses have a, quote, warped attitude toward the country and their responsibilities to it. This attitude is caused by too much education, too much prosperity, and too much technology. The demands from the militants involve freedom from work, law, the common decencies, the principles of Christianity, and freedom of sex. You know, kind of ripped from today's headlines.
And
this was a quote that was printed in 1969.
Right.
And so we've been doing the same thing for a long time and even, you know, before 1969. And then, you know, Andy mentioned the forces kind of outside the university system and inside the system. It's a kind of a long-standing trope or explanation, you know, the outside agitator coming in and corrupting the minds of fill in the blank. So it's not our students, these other people coming in. So our students are good or our students are well-meaning, but you have these outsiders who are pushing an agenda. It is a level of that, but it's also a good way to criticize the movement, but stay friendly with those who you want to stay friendly with.
We've been speaking with Rodney Kite Powell, the director of the Touchton Map Library and Hillsborough County historian at the Tampa Bay History Center. Rodney, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Andy Hughes, curator of Florida Studies at Special Collections at the University of South Florida Library. Andy, thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show for this week. Our executive producer is Grayson Doctor. Jackson Harp was our engineer for this episode. Production assistance from Nancy Guan and Megan Bowman. Subscribe to Florida Matters wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.